Okay, Chris, we're on air. I'm calmer now than I was like 30 seconds ago. So how are you?
I'm good. I'm good. It's, you know, we've talked about a couple times, just that whole, do we need a bit of an on-ramp? Can we go right to tape?
And, no, today we needed an on-ramp.
Today we needed an on-ramp. Absolutely. Do we touch on it at all, or we just leave it a mystery? What our decompression was necessary? Is there any way to even talk about it? Like, that would be, let's say, professionally safe in this entirely very personal kind of moment that we have on, you know, typically Saturday mornings. Is there anything we could share?
I think so. I think we can simply share, because the public, I believe, would be heated about this, or were heated about this. And I think the people in the profession and our unions were heated about this. So I think we can drop the general topic.
Okay.
And I were talking,
talked about it before. Actually, we've touched on it a little bit. How would you frame it?
I would say that you and I were talking about our sick days.
Yep.
What we're eligible for, and the days that we're permitted when we're not sick. Like, we call them personal obligation days in my school board. You and I were just going back and forth about the rules around those and when you can use them and when you can't use them.
Yep. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, we call them, we have personal illness and family illness. So,
oh, you have family illness?
Yeah. So family illness is in, we have days away from working that are earmarked that we can use for family illness. So if you know, one of your kids are sick, one of those days. Yeah.
Are you paid for that?
Yeah. Yeah. But it comes out of that, a total number that you're allotted according to the collective agreement. And I'm sure that other jobs have similar attendance policies for their staff. And it's one of those areas that definitely leads quickly through people's politics when you start to discuss what, you know, your needs versus my needs versus system needs. And, you know, what does that mean to try and manage? I guess the decoded aspect in this is that, you know, as fathers, as parents, as a partner in the family life, there's definitely things that happen that can be random and can be scheduled, but sometimes those things can't be moved from where, you know, we can sort of, you know, take a specialist appointment for that matter. That specialist appointment is not only just an appointment that can hit in the middle of the day, just like anyone else, any other person, any other family. But in this case, you know, if there's a specialist appointment that one of my children have to go to, they tend to fall during the workday. It just seems like it. Like, the, you know, I can sort of snag a specialist appointment for myself that could be after the bells. But it just seems time and time again, the ones where the kids have to go to, it's inside the school day. So then one of the parents has to take time away, and then you're negotiating with basically your school board, you know, to say, this is the day that I need to take off. And sometimes it's smooth as silk. Other times questions are asked, and we're under the sort of auspices of that. At any point you could be asked for a doctor's note. And that's a whole other discussion, you know, about having doctor's notes, and a lot of different industries wrestle with what that means. But just the other side is, like, you know, you feel a little, I don't know, off balance when there's things that you know are built into your contract, and then you're sort of feeling like you also have to go and negotiate it a second time somehow. So, any person that works directly for an employer, so there's no union in there and there's no other governing bodies, that can be great too. It can be bad too, because without, you know, union representation and other governing bodies, you know, a single look at what your workday should look like can sometimes put conditions into your work that are not, they can be even worse. So yeah, political wrestling match. I'm guessing probably any teacher could share a story saying, you know, it worked really great this time. And the other time, yeah, not so much. But then it was back to great again. You know, it spikes. It spikes all over the place.
I hear you. I totally understand. Mm-hmm. And I'm happy for the on-ramp today, because conversation we had, I probably, well, it's, we were talking about personal experiences, and some of those personal experiences are not meant for public consumption. And mm-hmm. I think that's fair, right? Not everybody walks around sharing everything that happens in their lives. But yeah, so last week there was no on-ramp. This week there was an on-ramp. So you never know, right? So Chris, I don't know about you, but by Monday, by 1 p.m. on Monday, I felt like I had never left my school for any kind of break.
Isn't that wonderful? Yourself? Wasn't that wonderful, that sense of comfort? Now, was it just the familiarity? And I'll get to my experience, but was it just the familiarity, as in it was just so comfortably awesome and the connections were so steely and strong? Or were you actually mourning the fact that, was it more like mourning, oh geez, like that whole restorative nature of having a break is just like out the window by 1 p.m.
It was a little bit of each. How's that? Yeah. Is that fair? It was so nice to jump back in and be with the kids and to see them and to reconnect the relationships, right? That was, and the teachers, that was cool. Nothing wrong with that. And like you and I had spoken in the last episode, there was mental preparation involved. There was a space in my plans for the student voice, for the student experience. And that space was used, right? Like they got, some of them really needed that space. So I'm glad it was built in. And it was good. But by 1 o'clock, I had the start of the day. I had a recess. I had a lunch duty. I had lunch. And then there was no escaping the piles of work in terms of like, okay, this has to be dealt with now. This has to be dealt with later. There's a field trip next week. I need to order a bus. I need to collect money. I need to notify parents. Like, the reality of the job was there right in front of you, and it was not going anywhere. And so by that time, it was, because that's my planning time at that time. So it was like, I finally had a moment to hit the brakes and to step away from instructing, because that's, I got to go to plan. And that's when I was like, oh geez, these are all these things are here. They need to be dealt with. They need to be prioritized. And then it was like, okay, I've not gone anywhere. I'm back in it. It was just that feeling of just being present at the moment, really, right? Like I wasn't reflecting on, oh, I wish I was at home doing nothing. And I wasn't thinking about, oh, I can't wait till March break. I was literally in the moment. This is what needs to be dealt with. This is what's in front of me right now. And you just, I don't know about you and other teachers, but I just get into a vibe, right? Like it just starts rolling along, and it feels wonky when you're in it, but when you look back on it, it's smooth. It's just the way it runs. So yeah, it was good. It was good in terms of things were clicking, but it was not good because now you're into a mode that you're kind of out of for a little bit. But I mean, it's nothing out of the ordinary. It's just that little bump that you feel after you've had so much time off. But it was good. I mean, midweek, it was, like I said, we were just rolling. Like I walked in, I said, this has to be done this week, and I'm giving you the time and the resources to make it happen. And I'm going to be checking in with you. We're kind of having a lot of fun. Like I was using words like red zone. So like Thursday, I'm like, we're in the red zone. If you're not by this point in this project to demonstrate your understanding of social studies, we got big problems, right? And I've been checking in with you, and now you're in the red zone. We got problems. I had a little bit of fun. One of my students refuses to put his shoes on properly, so it's unsafe. He wears them like slippers. So I downloaded an app on my phone that plays an alarm. It's like a prison break, like one of those things. And so whenever he walks in the room with his slippers on, I don't even talk. I just hit the button, and then he looks up and he laughs at me, and he gets down, he puts his shoes on properly. So, you know, like we're back in the swing, we're having some fun. I'm glad the week's over, because, you know, weekend time. Now it's family time, and then we go back to it on Monday. So that was my week. I'd love to hear about yours.
My, you know, for me, it's, I kind of go through the weekend as, I smooth out the edges. So I really don't arrive at the weekend thinking too much about that I'm having time away from work. I agree with you. The family time, I think that's the thing that I noticed most, is just not spending so much time with my kids, and not just the intentional stuff, but the accidental stuff, just being able to kind of sit and chat at random times during the day, or, hey, you want to go out and do some tobogganing? So it was sort of, I noticed that. It's funny how, I guess it's a sign of some pro-social or just positive fact that I can go back to work and I don't arrive there and I'm a complete blank slate. Like somehow I've entirely forgotten how to exist in those spaces. It made me reflective on what it's like for some students that, you know, sometimes my colleague and I will talk about at what point. So maybe we receive a new student into the class, or this could be any context. You receive a new student into the class, and I wonder sometimes when I watch the way that they move through the class and their transitions and how they connect with other students and the materials and just the environment and experience. And I wonder to myself, at what point in their history, maybe they forgot what it meant to be a student, or maybe they didn't learn it in the same way that some of my current students might, or even myself. And if they're holding back, so sort of like they're in this classroom and maybe just opposing support and opposing mentorship. But I find for me, because part of the place that I find myself in my general workday is around working with students that are breaking school rules, and breaking school rules in a way that those school rules are presented to students every single September, and they're presented, you know, in repetition and in varied ways, and the whole staff represent these rules, and not only sort of like in a legislative fashion, like here's the thing you have to read, but also kind of connected to life in general. So, you know, here's a mentor you can connect with, students. So if you're having trouble connecting with other people, here's a person that can show you about clubs. So it's really a nice kind of holistic approach to getting people to be functional in that space. So we often reflect, you know, we reflect on what looks like a deep, how it's impacting the student to not be able to connect with that automaticity. And again, for me, some people might argue and say, yeah, well, that's the man, that's the system, and you're going along to get along. But there's also something pretty comforting in that fact when I observe it from a student's point of view that's desperately trying to connect with that same automaticity, and there's just pieces that might be missing. They can't get there. So that's my, yeah. But for me, I work. Yeah. I would love to be able to say something like, yeah, you know what? Like, I woke up Monday morning in a cold sweat and I was like, oh my gosh, I don't. And I don't have the dreams the night before. I don't have those dreams like tomorrow's a school day and heart racing. I just kind of wake up. I tend to wake up at the same time every day. If it's a work day, I have one way path that my routine can go. If it's a day off, you know, I find myself chatting with a lovely fellow like yourself.
I want to throw in the fact that on Monday morning, when I woke up, it was snowing like crazy. And after my shower and kind of like getting ready, I hear a snowblower running. So I look outside. I see my neighbor across the street. He's got the blower out, and I'm like, oh, this is not good. This means that the snow is deep enough that it can't be shoveled easily or quickly. So then I had a little bit of a wrench thrown into my plans, because part of my morning routine with the kids and with like the way things work, there's no time to snow blow the driveway. Like, that's not part of it. So I got everybody ready, did what I needed to do. And then I looked outside and I'm like, oh yeah. Like, even with the kids, like 10 minutes before we go, I can't get this shoveled So I dedicated 10 minutes to the snowblower, and I literally looked at the clock. I started the thing up and I just went nuts. And then after 10 minutes, I was done, came in, and you know, I felt like I needed another shower because it's just one of those things, right? But that was not part of the plan. There was no part that said that I had to go out there and do maybe four to 5 inches of snow. but that was interesting because talk about double trouble. Like, first you're going back to work after having been off for 2 weeks, and then you're not gonna be able to get to work if you don't clear the driveway properly. So that was interesting. But you know, it made for great conversation because when we got to school, people are like, how are you doing? You know, they don't really know how you're gonna respond. So I'm like, I'm great, man. I just spent time snow blowing my driveway. That's something I like to do. And so then you get into that whole conversation about how you got to work and how long it took. And so it kind of, in a way, it was a nice distraction from, oh, geez, we're back at work. You know, it was like, no, today was nuts. I had to do this and I had to do that. I had to get my kids to school. So it was a nice distraction. And then when the kids came in, they rolled in slowly because buses were slowed down by the weather. Kids were being dropped off instead of walking. So like, in a way, it was kind of nice because everybody was wonky because of just, we had to get to school, and getting to school was a little bit different that morning due to the weather. So in that, it was kind of like a gift because now that I think about it, as kids were strolling in, I didn't have all 25 at once. You know, I had like six to start, and then about 5 minutes later, I got six more. And so it was nice because they would roll in and I'd be like, hey, how's it going? How are you? So they really all got more attention and more individual time than they normally would on a regular day where the bus arrives on time and everybody's schedules are working the way that we're all accustomed to. So in that regard, it was a really smooth entry, but it was staggered. I didn't have everybody walk in at the same time. And even, I'm sure that would have worked, but like my little friend with the shoes, you know, he was the last one to arrive. And by that point, everybody in the room, they were in regular Monday morning routine. So even I had time with him to say, hey, what's going on? How are you doing? Like, it's good to see you back. Make sure you do this, this, and this, and, you know, the regular stuff. So it was a good start because I've had starts that haven't been so great, but this one was a good one. And like I said, midday, I was like, okay, I'm back. Like, my brain is totally wrapped around this thing. And as I talked to you today, like this week coming up, I know what's going on. I have some great ideas. Like, we're rolling again.
Yeah, you got me thinking around the amount of life that surrounds work. You know, you having to wake up in the morning and get into the snow blowing, and that wasn't necessarily on the horizon when you were hitting the sack the night before. And it's funny in those moments, and this is a parent moment, it's a teacher moment, but it's a parent moment. You know, there's a lot of different things that can fall into that. I mean, snow blowing is a simple one, but hearing that strange cough from one of the bedrooms, or you know, the power's out, or you come downstairs and it's like, oh my gosh, what's that puddle on the floor? You know, these things that kind of jump in into the day. And, you know, that's you learn what you're kind of made of in that moment. And this is, you know, I frame it as a teacher and a parent thing, but it could also, it's just a life thing. It makes me also think about how playing with, so in that moment, you know, your heart maybe starts to race, you start sort of reaching for your mental resources. Who do I have to call? Who do I have to connect with? Oh my gosh, I can't. And then maybe that's not the only thing you notice. You know, heck, maybe there's a strange cough and the snowblower. And so you start to get this, you level up pretty quick, and you get to know your toolkit pretty quickly. And I'm always wowed. I get blown away. I get really blown away by the moment, because for me, I will land on that spot. Like, oh my gosh, how am I going to get this done? Like, how am I ever going to get this done? You check the clock and you look to see how much time you have between what's an expected arrival time or an expected connection time. Cause sometimes it's dropping off the kids. Sometimes it's, yeah, you got to get the dog out to go to the bathroom, and everything just gets thrown into this whirlwind. And what time and time again, and you only get to this after the fact, is that fear on the front end, and I'll frame it as fear. It might be something different for somebody else, but that simple fear of not being able to deliver, how it really stalls you. Because when you go into that mode, you know what to do. You got to start getting the family up. You sort of put the dog in their room for a second so they're not going to, you know, have a leak in the house. You know, if there's a puddle on the floor, maybe you're supposed to say, well, maybe that was the dog. Maybe it's not leaking from the ceiling. Like, you start to access all this kind of, kaleidoscopic thinking. And eventually you get people in place. So then if you have someone that can help you out, you've called them. And then you start to get some plans made if you're the teacher, you know. But I always love to think about afterwards, what was the thing that I said I couldn't get done? And I actually got it done. And I try and lock that in. And you and I, we talked about this before, about when you actually start to save time. It was that, I think it was the 7 hour factor with the podcast. And you start to realize that when you get better at a thing, where are you reallocating that time? And are you actually pausing and saying, I did it, you know, like I did this thing. Like, I just put the badge on my shoulder here because I just, you know, I made it through that challenge. So there's so many things now. I had a colleague one time say, so a colleague that knows me from before being a parent, and they're talking about their morning, how, you know, they slept in, they just didn't have their lunch ready, and, you know, the traffic was terrible. And I didn't even have to say anything. They turned to me and they said, I don't know how you do it. I can barely get myself out of bed. I can barely make my own lunch. And I came here and they said, you have two kids? I was like, yeah, I got two kids. And you were here before me? And you're like sitting there getting your prep done. Like, you're, as you said, like you're arriving on Monday. All good. I'm in my day, right? But the amount of life that existed outside of that, like I said, the colleague turned to me and said, I don't know how you do it. I couldn't find, the coffee wasn't turned on this morning. And I was just like, this is going to be a bad day. I'm like, oh man. It has to take a lot more than that to derail my day. Like, I need to have, throw four or five of those wrenches in before I start, you know, throwing up the white flag.
I don't want to spend, like, I don't want to hijack the conversation and talk about all the weird morning surprises, but I have one that I want to share because it's happened several times. And now I've built a plan into place. Because of that nervous feeling you get when you're like, oh no. So here's a good one. When you can't find your car keys. And so, like, what do you do? Because my wife's gone. She leaves before we do. So she's gone. She's gone to work. If she can't find her keys, then she has an army of people to help her. But she gets in her car, she leaves. Then when I'm up to bat, if I can't find the car keys, we have a problem. Because I've got two kids that need to get to school. So here's the plan. Here's my emergency plan. The kids can walk. We don't live that far from their school. So if they have to walk, they walk. So I get them in emergency preparation mode. You two are walking. Get to school now. And when I figure out what's happening with me, I will call the school and make sure you got there. Go. They go. Then I call the school and I tell the school, listen, I can't find my car keys. So tell me now, do you have someone who can jump in so that I can grab a cab to work? Like, I need to know. If that can't work, then I need to call in for a supply teacher now to use my emergency plans. And then we'll figure out the code later. But like, this is make or break time. I can't find them. I would not be calling you if... You know, like, I've searched, they could be in my wife's purse. They could be in her coat. They could have fallen somewhere. I just can't find them. And something needs to happen now. That's the plan. It's not come to that. One day I came this close, that close. I was grabbing stuff from the house, throwing it in the car. The kids get in, everything's ready. I go to grab my keys, not there. And we're talking, I'm about 7 minutes away from dropping my students off at school at the time that a supervisor's outside. So I still have 7 minutes to play with here, right?
Dropping your kids off?
Yeah, because when I drop them off,
yeah,
I drop them off 15 minutes before the bell rings so that there's supervision. Supervision only happens 15 minutes before the bell rings.
Right.
I don't drop them off before that because there's no supervision and they're outside. So that time, that's a hard time. Like, I don't play with that time. It's, they get dropped off. They get released from me at that time. And then I go to work. So I have 7 minutes to play with. I'm looking everywhere. I get the kids out of the car. I'm like, you go here, you go here. Dad's really like, I can't find them anywhere. So they go off. They come back. I have about 3 minutes left. They got nothing for me. I'm like, okay, stand here, pop the trunk, get your stuff on your back because you might be walking. So they do that. And then I look down by the garage door. My keys, they just fell from my hands when I was carrying everything. They were right there in front of me, but I was panicking because I'm like, I got to get to work. I got to get the kids to school. What happens if I can't find my keys at all? Like, then I'm really screwed because it's not like I've got 10 spares hiding away somewhere. It's the key for the car. Like, it's a big deal. How do you get a new key for your car? Right? Like, all these things are rolling through my mind. All the people I have to call. How much time am I going to like miss from work? Am I going to have to take a cab for the next week until somebody can get me keys? Like, it's just ridiculous, the stuff that flows through my brain. But now I have I've got a much more fluid system. When I come home, the keys go in the same spot every time, right? Like, I've read about this. I've read about how to make sure you don't forget things. It's to make sure that they always, you got to stick by these rules of keeping things in the same place all the time, or, you know, 98% of the time, so that you know where to go automatically. Anyway, that story took longer than it should have, but I have now a plan for that, right? Like, the car key thing, we have a plan. If my wife loses her car keys, it's easy. Everybody get in the car now. Everything's ready. Get in. We're driving mom to work, and then we're going to go about doing our thing, because she doesn't leave that much earlier than, like, she leaves like 10 to 15 minutes earlier than us, type mm-hmm. of thing. So we can get her there. And at the very latest, we have to make sure she's there 15 minutes before the bell rings. We can do that easily if we had to. Like, she can get there because I'm the later start time, but she's the early start time. So if I'm screwed, I'm on my own. So I always have to make sure that I've done everything I can to make sure that I'm going to be okay. So that's my story.
It's awesome. I've gone through that. I've gone through that. And it's so, yeah, me on that, I'll just say it's funny. I totally agree with the routines. And me at a molecular level, I do not like routines. I know that. I don't naturally, sorry. I guess I'll have to fine slice this. I don't follow routines well. I'll establish it. I know it. I can make it. I can lay out that plan. I mean, it's a huge part of being a teacher as well. It was a huge part about being a chef. The regimented nature of ensuring that you deliver, oh, it's so locked down. I mean, it's an enforced inoculation of type A behavior. Like, you just can't deny it. And, you know, there's no chef that I would say that's on Food Network or, you know, making the big bucks that's just a random artist doing crazy stuff all the time. It's like their system allows them to be random and crazy. But they have a pretty solid OS in the background there. And my OS is a little flawed. My brain will create a great plan, but my OS is like, no, like, fight it, do this other thing, to the point where, like, to you, like, the keys may have dropped out of your pocket. So me coming home at the end of the day, totally agree. I got the bowl. I put my wallet, I put my keys in it when I come in, when I'm in touch with my operating system. But here's a thing that my brain does to me sometimes. So for whatever reason, there's that quick moment of distraction when you walk in the door. So your pattern of entering into this relationship with your operating system is broken by a distraction. So I walk in the house. If I were to take off my jacket, you know, I know before you take off the jacket, here's my plan. Before I take off the jacket, put the keys, close the door, put the keys in the bowl, put my wallet in the bowl, then take off my jacket. There's the routine. But let's say I'm coming in and all of a sudden I'm walking in and the dog is right there at the door and the dog has to go out. So then if my kids aren't in a space where their plan is like working perfectly, because normally it's my kids that take the dog out and the dog's there and I'm like, this is going to cause a mess. I'm like, okay, kids, go unpack your backpacks, get your lunch bags into the kitchen, get your agendas on the table. And then I take the dog out. Well, I've just broken the possibility that my operating system, because I don't have an extra contingency. It's like one note. Put the keys in the wallet in the bowl, take your jacket off. So then I come back in, I'm like, oh, you know what? I'm kind of cold right now. So I shove the keys back in my pocket, or I'm still holding the keys. Maybe I get my wallet in there, but maybe in that time I've moved my wallet to my other pocket because I took them both out conveniently. But because of the hand I have them in, I put them in a different pocket. So now I'm carrying my wallet. Carrying my keys, and I think, oh, something occurs to me. I'm like, wow, you know what? I really didn't get an extra coffee today. Like, I need an extra coffee. So I walk to the kitchen with my jacket on, shoes off, carrying my keys, and I have done this. I go up to the cupboard, okay? And because of, okay, I was like, oh, that's the coffee cup I want. So I set the keys on the shelf in the cupboard. I rustle around. I get the coffee cup out. So now I'm fixated on the coffee cup. Close the cupboard door. Easy peasy. I'm not even processing that. I've just put my keys in the cupboard. So I go and make my coffee. The kids are now the stuff. And what the funny thing is I've taken this side path. See if I can do this. I've taken this side path off of my operating system, completely forgotten this whole middle system. And I arrive here like, okay, time to make dinner. And I haven't put my keys in the bowl. And my day goes on. I reconnect with my routine beautifully. I'm like, wow, that worked out well. Nothing bad happened there, and I got the dog out. Woo! Points for me. What I don't realize is I put my keys in the cupboard. Have my coffee. My kids are settled. Life is good. Fast forward, 5:30 a.m. the next morning, and I'm saying, you know, in that sudden, and it can happen at any point. Where are my keys? I'm like, oh. Now, if I'm lucky in that case, what saves me on the operating system is that I need a coffee. I hope to God that there's no dishes in the dish rack that are nice and clean, so I don't go there and grab my favorite coffee mug. I hope I've put it back in the cupboard the night before and just didn't notice the keys. So then I walk up to that cupboard, I open up, I'm like, who put my keys here? I don't even remember it was me. I've done that with the fridge too. I've done that with the fridge. I put it in the fridge. Yep. So I love this. The whole routines, I love them. I try. I really try. But sometimes I feel like my brain is plotting against me, dude.
Oh, I hear you. Even when I don't follow routine, in my operating system, I have backup. Like I do have some contingencies. Excuse me. Like, for example, if the wallet and the keys don't go where they normally are supposed to be, I will notice. Once I'm out of the zone of where that stuff usually lives, I will notice. And then I will remove them from me and I will put them in the path that leads me back to the place where they go. So they can't be missed. So I'll give you a great example. Yesterday, I had my wallet in my back pocket and it didn't get left. It didn't get left where it's supposed to get left, okay? And I'm like on the third floor of my house and I'm like, oh, my wallet's in my pocket. So next time I went down, I took my wallet out and I put it in a place that will always lead me back to my wallet and keys. And so then when I'm following that path, it means I'm leaving the house and I see the wallet and I grab it and then I get it on me. And then, so, you know, or my wife will say, where's such and such? And I'll say, okay, it's supposed to be here. She'll say, it's not there. Okay, check here. It's not there. Then check here. And she's like, how did you know? And I'm like, just, I've got those backup, I've got those other places where I leave stuff if they don't get left where they're supposed to be left 100% of the time. You know what I mean? So, and I think that bothers people in the house because they'll move stuff And I'm like, why'd you move that? That's where it goes. Well, that's not where it belongs. And then you get into, I want to say discussion, but really it's an argument, because, you know, your position is, hey, don't move my stuff because it's all supposed to be where I put it, kind of thing. And then the response is, well, it's been there forever. It's not where it's supposed to go. It's like, oh, come on. Okay. So then you have, and that's my operating system saying, no, refuse. Do not bend down to somebody else's expectation or rule, because it's going to mess with your OS, and you can't have that. Because, you know, how often do you refresh an operating system? I know that people say you should do it every 6 months or whatever, but I don't. Sometimes I'm forced, depending on what's going on. It's the same at school. You put certain things in certain places, and when people touch them or move them, it's like, hey, I can't find such and such. That's supposed to be there. Who moved it? And then you get into the conversation of like, because with the kids, it's different. The kids, they don't purposely move things to upset you. They may do it because they need something, they grab it and they go on. But I tell the kids all the time, there's in our room and in most classrooms, I'm not going to say all because I don't want to speak for all of my colleagues, but there are places for things so that we know where to find them. Like the scissors always go in the same place, because when you need scissors, you'll know where to go. The glue goes in a particular place because you know that that's where the glue goes. You know, anything of value gets locked. And if it's not in the cabinet locked, and now you're freaking out because you can't find your iPod, well, it's supposed to go where things get locked. That's why it's there. And so it's funny because not everybody operates that way. So in working with people, knowing that they're all different, knowing that everybody has their own way of learning, that doesn't work for a lot of people. Sometimes people, I'm going to use the word chaos, and I'm going to use it respectfully. Some people operate from a place of chaos. That's their comfort zone. And so they don't do very, that's cluff. Yeah. Yeah. They don't do very.
As long as I accept that, I'm okay. When I'm in denial of that, that's when it gets messy. If I somehow convince myself that I'm like, it's all good.
But you're an adult, right? Like the kids, True. The kids operating from chaos, it's a whole different story. And so they're constantly telling me, well, my pencil's gone. Like, that's because you walked over to so-and-so and you put it down there. Yeah. Like we have pencils that are labeled now, because when somebody looks down, it's, oh, Johnny left Johnny's pencils here. And I'm like, take it back to Johnny. Like I'm building the system so that when Johnny's pencils are all over the place, you know, even in the library, it's hilarious. I'll have people come to my door, knock on my door. I'll say, hey, what's up? And they're like, we found this pencil. It says Johnny, room 8 on it. I'm like, wicked. Thanks for being honest and bringing it back.
System, I'm like, system check.
Johnny, why was your pencil in the library? Well, remember when we went to the library this morning? I guess I took my pencil with me and I just left it there. Okay, awesome. Let's keep going here. So I try to build in as much as I can, and I try to help people learn what organization is and how it works, because you know what? I'm evaluating organization on the report card. It's a learning skill. And so I get that we're not all organized. I'm not always organized. I get it. But I'm responsible for evaluating and reporting that. And so let's try to build in some stuff. So for Johnny, being organized is being able to find his labeled pencil in the room. It's not about having it in his desk and him having it ready when he needs it. That would not be fair, because that's not how he lives his life, right? But being able, organized enough to know that the room's the pencil's gonna be in the room labeled, and your job is to then go search it. And that for me shows me that you're organized, that you know that your pencil's in the room and you got to get up and go look for it. Great.
A couple things. I think I remember one of our first conversations, you mentioning a little bit of success criteria that all your pencils were ready. I'm having this flashback. I think this was something you were talking about in sort of having the room set up. And now I realize the deeper sort of implications of that. It wasn't just sharpened. It could very well have been they were pre-labeled as well for the kids. Like, here's your pencil. I'm like, man, that's a bit of prep that, I mean, I wouldn't have, I should try that just to see how that works in my classroom, start labeling the things that way. The other thing that you make me think about is, I'm wondering for you, are you a, in building plans like this? So it's two different pieces. One, if you change your plan, how well do you share that with others? How clear are you? Are you completely keeping that, like, you keep that locked down? That's the first part. The other part is, it makes me wonder about whether or not you're a redundancy planner or a contingency planner. What are you more? What side of the fence do you fall on? The first one is kind of like, you could do an A or B. Are you a redundancy type planner? I just kind of wrote like this kind of a safety plan, right? Life safety plan. Contingency or redundancy? What do you naturally fall on?
That's a great question, man. I don't know. Like, I enjoy redundancy. Like, I tell you that right now, I enjoy it very much. I love backup plans. Like, I love building it in, because for me, well, since I'm talking about redundancy, so I must be more of a redundant person. I just enjoy it. I enjoy knowing that there's safety, right? Like, well, now that I think about it, I like redundancy.
Because for I think I'm contingency. Like, I think I could have done the definition that was in my head. So redundancy is like the doubling up, the backing up of, you might have similar systems that are, if one doesn't catch you, this one will catch you. If this doesn't catch you, this will catch you. So it's almost like, it becomes almost like a stack, right? For me, contingency is, how many different wild scenarios can I imagine? So it becomes like this lateral plane of possibilities, or just like mind map, because I don't know what direction it's going to run in. And I'm constantly fascinated by contingency. It's not the when a thing happens, will a certain thing support it? It's the what if, and let's just go in this wild goose chase all around. So I'm more the...
Oh, go ahead, Chris.
I was going to say, yeah, it's definitely the contingency. And that's my downfall. I would say that ultimately leads to my downfall. Because, you know, in trying to imagine, I don't often make it to a rational place of, if you create a bunch of contingencies, eventually you wrap back around and there's your redundancy. You know what I mean? It becomes kind of spiraled a little bit, as opposed to just one contingency making you run further and further away. So for your keys, how many sets of keys do you have?
I have two, but here's the problem. My wife has one of them.
Mm.
So when she goes to work, there goes that key.
Gotcha. It's funny, for to that end, we have doubled up keys too, but I never carry the key. So my wife I never take the vehicle that my wife drives in the morning. I never carry that key with me.
Neither do I.
I leave it in the bowl. Oh, and anyone that's not watching the video right now, I think there was a very knowing kind of look that passed between us. I get it.
I don't have that key on me either.
Yeah. Where it's one person's plan isn't the same as somebody else's plan. That's the thing. There we go. But no one's right. No one's wrong. It's just that tension that happens between two versions of the same plan.
That's killer, isn't it? Because it for is. Me, it's, if she calls me and says, I lost my key, then I say, okay, it's at the other one's at home. It's hanging on the hook where we keep our keys.
How are we going to get that? It's at home. It would be easier for me to drop by and get the spare from. Yeah.
It is, I don't funny. Know. It's good and bad, right? But yeah. I wish I was both. I wish I was redundant and contingent, because I wish, for example, I got a great one for you. I've always been at a school where you need to have emergency plans in the office, so that if something happens to you, God forbid something bad happens, you have a plan in the office and they can use it. Can you hold? I need to pause for a moment.
For sure.
Can you give me an example of contingency that you've rolled through your head?
I can start from a different POV. I know that in my current portfolio, one of the things that I would consider kind of, I don't know, I call it a superpower. It might not be considered a superpower, is that contingent sort of thinking allows me to really kind of openly explore other opportunities outside of my own head. Because in order for me to kind of create some other fantastical support system for a student that I might be working for, I really got to draw in random. And one of the things that I've done in the past is I look to the system to see where other departments or other schools. I'm not looking for best practice. I'm just looking to see where they may have landed on a similar issue or a challenge and what resources are they using. So in school, my contingent thinking, I would say, has definitely led me to finding resources within the board that someone might say, yeah, but that's the stuff that the math department uses. But then I say, no, but a piece of that really helps my kid right now that's on suspension. So I'm kind of reaching out into the imaginary and finding real things. And that's the benefit of the contingent thinking. What I do know is that because I'm kind of operating that way, I tend to pivot really quickly. And often my colleague doesn't understand it. And that has nothing to do with her. It has to do that I haven't revealed my thinking. So I shift really, really quickly. I find that in some ways, discussing redundant plans where it's sort of like that vertical stack of supports or if-thens, for me, my perception is that's easy to speak to. The contingent or that sort of like that outward thinking is hard for me to speak to, and I tend to do that more often. So, in that context, with students that are on suspension and expulsion, I'm constantly having to exist in somebody else's head. And that type of contingent thinking, because I'm reaching out to other schools for support all the time. So I really do have to understand their context. If I come back to just building redundancy for success, let's see, for these students, then I tend to look a little bit more at what's in the room with me right now. What does my own department, my own school provide for me? And I don't often sit there. I got to be honest. I tend to grab from outside far more. What are you thinking?
I'm just thinking about how the two of us are so different that way. Like, it's just neat to hear about it. Mm-hmm. And plus, I wonder if you'd be slightly different if you weren't in the context that you're in. Like, I wonder, Chris Clough, the grade 7 classroom teacher, I wonder what it would look like then based on how a classroom operates in the traditional sense. That's what I was thinking. And then I was wondering about how I can delve into the world of contingency a little bit more and not lose my love of redundancy. Because it's something to consider, the what ifs, right? Like, so before I kindly asked you to step up to the mic, I was gonna say that most classroom teachers in elementary school have an emergency plan or plans. It's for more than one day's worth of emergency. And back when I had my kids, and they're both very young, I remember my life was chaos. Like when you've got two young kids, you're not getting much sleep. You just never know what's going to happen, right? Like kids could get sick, you could get sick. So my redundancy was to build 5 days worth of plans that I would leave every day on my desk when I go home. So on my desk were 5 days worth of plans if I caught the flu or something. And then in the office was like 5 days worth of plans. So it was like, okay, whoops, I can't come in today and I don't have time to plan. Just use the stuff on my desk. And if for some strange reason the stuff on my desk wasn't on my desk, then the stuff in the office existed. Like, yeah. There was always, I don't know why, I like to have a backup plan. You know why? I think it's because when I was a kid, now we're getting deep. I think my dad never built redundancy into anything. And so I was always like, if this happened, then we were like out of luck. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
Like I'll give you an example of my dad. He, so my dad was, he was always making sure he did what he could to save as much money as he could. Like, he didn't want to just spend his money. My dad would pop the car up and take apart the brakes on the car. Like, he would do his own brakes. He would fix his own brakes, change his own brakes. And I remember watching this and saying, do you know what you're doing? And he's like, well, no, but I'll just put pieces back from where I took them from. And I was like, as a kid, I imagine I'm standing there staring at this situation. There are pieces everywhere. Now, I didn't know my dad's learning style until I studied learning styles. But I was like, oh my God, we're going to die the next time we go for a car ride because the brakes won't work. Now, if I did that, I would have called a mechanic and said, my car is coming in tomorrow at 2, okay? And they'd be like, yeah, okay. Then I would go and I would see if I could take things apart and figure it out, because I knew that if I couldn't make it work, tomorrow the car's heading into the shop anyway, so it's all good. Like, I've got my redundancy plan built in. If I can fix it, I'll just call the guy back and say it doesn't need to come in anymore.
Yeah.
But my dad wasn't going to do that. My dad was going to be like, no, if it doesn't work, we'll figure it out then. I don't know if it's not going to work. I'm hoping it works. So I remember just observing stuff like that and thinking it just didn't sit well with me. So yeah, I mean, now I don't have 5 days worth of plans on my desk anymore because, you know, my kids are not young. I am getting more sleep. There aren't as many morning surprises as there used to be. It's all good. But I mean, I remember explaining that to a colleague. We were sitting eating lunch, and she was at the same place I was years ago, two young kids. You know, her and her husband both work. He's a police officer. So he'd be like, some days she wakes up and she's doing everything by herself because he's on shift. She was like, you know, the one day I got myself into a situation, I was really stressed out. I said, hey, why don't you do what I did back in the day when I had two young kids? And she's like, well, what's that? And I told her. She was like, her eyes were wide open, like, that's awesome. So you've always got stuff there. It's relatively relevant. So it's not like, you know, because the stuff that goes to the office usually is pretty stale.
Yeah.
You know, so some principles push you to keep it relevant. But let's be honest, it's very difficult to revisit your emergency plans every couple of weeks just because you're doing 1,000 other things. It's not a priority. I mean, it's just not. So it's relatively stale. It's just stuff to get through the day if you can't be there and something's happened and you can't plan for the day properly. But my stuff was relatively, like, it was more of an open concept type stuff. And but, you know, depending on what they were learning, it could be customized that way. So I remember telling her this. And her eyes were wide open. And I felt so satisfied that there was actually another human that appreciated this type of redundancy. Because most people are like, you're nuts. You took time out of your life to do that. I'm like, well, it's time well spent. I'm reviewing my curriculum. I'm thinking about my kids learning, how they learn. So to me, it wasn't a complete waste of time. It was pretty decent stuff. But I really would like to hear more, like, in the coming days about your style and your way of doing what you do with terms of contingency, because I like it. I think there's something there for me that I can take and use.
You've got me realizing that, I mean, it's not a binary, right? The redundancy sets, let's say, the direction. Contingency just maybe sets up how many different redundancy categories can you consider? They dance together. I know for me, area of strength, contingency, man, you sit me down. That's me finding dots, connecting them, and then just kind of keep on running. And someone's got to say, hey, where's Clef? Like, oh, he ran off. He's off. He's looking for a resource. He's got, will he be back? But we're going to wait for a text or a tweet from the galaxy out there. It's like, well, someone get him a message to come back to the meeting, because we still have another 45 minutes left in it. So I know I don't sit well at the table if it sits too long. Like, I think to myself, okay, we've identified my thing. I'm going to identify all the different variations and possibilities. I'm going to do a ton of work on that. I'm going to go search and rescue. And then somebody else that wants to spend time building that column of here's the structure that we're going to go through. I always say, okay, now you go for it. I have an appreciation for it. I think the power in it, and you kind of touched on this, is the updating. When you go back in and you take a peek, are you refreshing it? Because the relevancy is so important. It doesn't matter which type you are in your planning. It's the, are you also building in time to go back and reviewing it? Because even the most detailed redundant planning based on the multiplicity of contingencies is based in time. And you can't keep handing in that same, if we're talking about lesson plans, is it in time with where everyone is? Or is it something that, you know, yeah, I got my safety plans in there. I put them in 5 years ago. I'm good. Right. So you want to refresh that.
That's the best. The people who, yeah, they've been at school for X amount of time, and it's the same emergency plans every year. The only difference is they change the times, or your planning time gets moved to another time. And so in your plans, you have to lay out, oh, my planning time's here, my duties are here. Those have changed, but everything else is the same. I try not to do that. I try not to do that just because it's just not. When you're really comfortable, there's danger there, right? So you have to kind of shake things up every now and again. But you've heard my theory on change, right? I'd like some positive change to come my way as a teacher sometimes, and not always the perceived negative change that happens. So, oh geez, we gotta.
This was not where I wanted the conversation to go today. That's funny. I had a whole other stuff I wanted to ask you about, but I'll bring it back next week for sure. I love this. This is cool though. This was kind of fun to sort of, I would love to know more about the havoc that I've created in other people's lives by not sharing my plan. Just for people to tell me straight, Clough, come on, like stop, just come back. Like I literally said, come back to the meeting, Clough. We still got 40 minutes. My professional ADHD. Sorry, I cut you off. What were you gonna say?
Professional ADHD. I've never heard that before.
Yeah.
I like it. What was I gonna say? I was just gonna say we still haven't even revisited the list.
I know.
And that was supposed to be done 2 weeks ago.
Our year-end review.
Now I'm starting to feel like I'm in my classroom. Uh-oh, I got year-end review that's 2 weeks overdue. Clough is nowhere to be found at the meeting. His professional ADHD has kicked in.
Text him.
And I just rerouted your plan for the podcast for today.
That's all good, though. That was good. Well, it was the on-ramp. It was the on-ramp that we took. So.
It set the pace, right? Like it set the direction of where we were going to go next. But it's nice. Like, and I think I've said this before that this podcast, our chats, and decoding some of the things that are happening in our classrooms and in education, it really offers me like a really cool and fresh perspective from which I reflect on. Like, it's really neat that the things we talk about, I think about, and then I look at myself in my room and see how it plays out and whether I'm comfortable with things or not comfortable with things. Mm-hmm. Sometimes not every idea that comes out of this I'm good with. Some of them I'm like, no, this doesn't work. I don't like it. I'm not going to try. Like, remember when I took my class outside of the four walls of my classroom? Mm-hmm. I like that. Like, I like that. They like that. They enjoy the different perspective, right? Like they enjoy the flow that comes from being in another space. And they're really, my kids this year are really good about not wanting to just generally stay in their assigned space in the room. They like to be in the back room. They even like to go behind my desk or in front of my desk because the way it's situated, it offers a completely different perspective of the room. It's like low to the ground. Like there's a number of different things that it provides them with that offers them, I don't know, avenues to creativity and sometimes collaboration. But that idea helped me kind of move my practice in a direction that my students like, that they're enjoying it. They like that. There are other things we talk about that make me completely uncomfortable. And I consider them, and then I either go with them or I don't go with them. So it's good. It's good that way. There's a lot of thinking, and I appreciate that.
Me too. Where I like to is where I'm constantly craving. I'm constantly craving the thing being brought to mind that I just didn't notice. And I find that our conversation brings that. When we talk about the routines and the patterns and just kind of getting into that groove can get pretty deep. It really can. It can get really deep. And you might be getting the work done, and it might be the right work to do. But what I know in my heart is that I really enjoy seeing the new perspective, right? Again, the contingency guy, like what else, what's going on the other side of the fence there? What are they working on? I'd love to see that. And in doing that, I come across some really amazing moments that check the evolution of my thinking. So someone comments on a tweet that, and they're just overjoyed, or a post or overjoyed. They're like, that is awesome. I really enjoyed that. It's getting me thinking. And then I kind of place that in my evolution. I'm like, wow, that was kind of like me 2 years ago or 3 years ago. And look how you've opened up a window to somebody else, just like your colleague mentioning, we'll do plans, which on the face is a very obvious kind of step. But for that person, it was entirely new learning. You just kind of go, that was cool. Like, I helped someone out with something that I just figured was kind of like normal. Like, this is just what I do. So I find this conversation as well kind of sparks me up thinking about those things that what I've assumed to be kind of normal in my day and what is just kind of like everyone's experience, it's not. And I think it's also the extended nature of this. Like, we're coming up on 20 episodes in. So we've definitely got deeper looks at what our daily experiences are. So that's really cool. And I appreciate that.
No problem. So until next week, hopefully.
Have a good one. For sure. And
we'll be in touch as we always are.
Absolutely.
Take care, Chris.
Take care, Roland. Nice talking.